Hi, I'm Fabi Fav.
And this is Babelito.
And we are
Latinos Who Lunch,
the podcast where we talk about important things like
Bienvenido, Favido Navido. ¿Dónde está su esposa Navida componiendo el vestido Cardi B?
Hello, hello, hello.
Que show.
Just here, living my best life. How are you?
I am snowed in. I cannot leave this house because we have the first snow of the season. Y encima de todo eso, tengo diarrea, so it is not my day. I'm not going
to
lie.
Wow, you're getting right to it. You know, look at this growth. Remember when I tried to talk about poop with you on the podcast and you were not having it?
Girl, it's not like you try to talk about poop. You talked about my poop for like 10 episodes straight. That's completely different.
No, 10 episodes, que exagerada, wey. You know what? Maybe you shouldn't put so much fucking crema on your tacos and you won't have so much diarrhea, bitch.
Exactly. Tanto pinche bologna.
Okay.
But I'm good. How you doing?
I'm great. I'm here living my best life in Ashland, Oregon. Shout out to all the amazing people here at the Schneider Museum of Art and Southern Oregon Center for the Arts. It's been really amazing. Yo, who knew? This is little town, you know, this little sleepy town in South Oregon is full of amazing artists and really talented individuals. There's a Shakespeare company out here, the Oregon Shakespeare Company.
Nice.
And so I've been meeting a lot of actors and really cool, just really cool producers and, you know, designers that help with the stages and educators. I saw a couple of productions. So shout out to, they did a comedy of errors, you know, Shakespeare's, yeah. But they did it in Spanglish and it's called La Comedia.
Oh,
and
nice.
It was so good. And that same cast, they were in this show called Mother Road, which is an original by an artist here in Ashland, and it's going to travel to DC soon. So just shout out to them.
Do they have a website so I can put it in the show links?
Yes, girl. Google it, loca.
Nice.
Oregon Shakespeare Festival. Yes, yes, yes. It's a big deal here. But it looks so beautiful here. It's high desert, so it's not snowing here. But the trees are all different colors, and it's just gorgeous.
Yeah,
and how's Chicago?
Oh God, Chicago! This fucking weather, man. But I don't know. I think at the beginning it's fun. At the beginning you see the snow and you send pictures or you post the pictures and it's all great. Pero después de días y fucking días, a mí lo que más me afecta es el fucking sun, man. It doesn't come out, and sometimes you will go a week without sun. But this year I prepare myself. I've been taking vitamin D3 since August. And it's been okay, because last year there will be days where I was like, I will be like, what is going on? Like, why do I feel so fucking depressed? And it's because of that. It's because of the sun. But no, like, Chicago is great. I was so invigorated, and I want to talk about this before we get into the food. Because I had a class. I have my landscape seminar, which I always talk about here. But we had a discussion on nationalism. Dude, it was so amazing. I have the best fucking students. I went from a seminar of 4 students to almost 18 students. It's almost full, into all grad students. And we just talked for 3 hours about nationalism, how it works in Latin America, how it works in the States, the politics of going into war when people are ashamed for not enlisting. And it was so amazing. So shout out to all my students, because really this is this is my favorite class I've ever taught in my, how long have I been teaching? 8 years. Oh my God, I've been teaching for 8 years. So yeah, shout out to all of my students.
So what is your landscape class? Like, what do you get into in that class?
So what we're doing is that we're looking at landscape as a verb, right? So we look at landscape painting. We look at the actual built environment. We look at photography. We were looking at Westerns and how they depict the West. We spent a whole class on the expansion of the empire, both from Spain towards the North, towards what today is the U.S. Southwest, and from the United States towards the West. manifests and the politics of manifest destiny. We had a whole class on sentimentality and how women and the idea of domesticity played a huge role in the expansion of the empire. How women at the home taking care of men that go out and explore, they had a huge impact on the development of the West. Themes like that. And it's so interesting because what I do in my classes is that I have my students present their projects, which have nothing to do with Latin America. And through the methodologies of art history and Latin American art, they start adapting them. So I have a student from China who's looking at the way that the United States has been collecting China's art and museum. And she's adapting the methodologies of Claudio Lamnitz, which is one of the books that I recommended on my top five books list, which I did a couple of months ago. So it's those type of things that it's exciting because it's not just for Latinos. No, you know, just not for Latinx. It's for anybody, as long as you understand or you grasp the ideas that I present in class. And it's been fucking amazing. And I've been writing my paper because I have a presentation in February. So I've been writing my paper as I've been reading and teaching the class. So it's been pretty, it's invigorating. Yesterday felt so good.
Cool.
Yeah. Pero platícame, ¿qué comiste hoy?
Oh, my classes are going fine. Thanks for asking. What did I eat today? Nothing. You know why? Because, girl, I got up in the middle of the night last night. I could not sleep. And I just, like, truly had a midnight snack at the witching hour. And I've been trying to, like, you know me as a representative of the vegan community. I try to eat as healthy as possible. And so... there's no junk food in my house, so it was really hard because all I wanted was junk food. So I ate kimchi with tortillas.
I mean, that sounds amazing. I mean,
it was a little un poquito fuerte for the middle of the night.
Nomás imagínate que salsa, and it's all good.
And then I had pickled jalapeno. I've been pickling a lot of stuff because that's what white people do, you know? So
when in Rome.
No, I'm just kidding. It's cross-cultural. But, oh, this is what, you know what? I'm going to tell you about this. I went to the farmer's market here in Ashland. And, you know, they actually have soil here that grows food. So not like in the desert like I'm used to in Vegas.
Right.
And so there was a lot of vendors. But you know me, I try to always buy from people of color. And I'm going to say it, Ashland, there was a lot of stands of white people appropriating other people's food. And so I found a few vendors. I want to give them some shout outs because there was only three. the gentleman that sold me the kimchi, he was actually of Korean descent. So that was awesome. And then there was Antonio's Farm. I bought some raspberry jelly or jam from them, preserves, I should say.
Nice.
And then there was a tamale stop. So I got some, oh my God, I said tamale like a white person. There was a tamale. I'm so sorry. My apologies to all the listeners. Wow.
To the Latinx.
Who am I, Gustavo Reyano or Lalo? What's his name? They say
Alcázar, ¿cómo se llama?
Oh my God. I could not get through. Oh yeah. It's that fucking Gustavo Arellano guy. I was reading his book, Taco USA or something, uh-huh. And he writes tamale instead of tamal. And I'm like, I have no respect for you, dude. Okay.
Is that from the fucking candy? Is that where it comes from? That's why everybody says it like that?
No, it's because white people go tamales and they think it's just the S is uh-huh. the plural, not the ES.
Right. Ugh.
And so now some Chicanos say tamale also, which is just...
Annoying.
I mean, I know I always preach against, like, shaming people for not speaking correctly, but, yo, it's tamal.
Like it's not that hard. It's actually easier to say it in Spanish.
Yeah, get your life together. Anyway... So I ate all that stuff. It was delicious. I did notice also there was a Turkish truck. I'm going to try it next time. And for the other people faking, like the ramen spot and the and the Argentinian empanada place, I could see you in there. There's no brown people cooking, okay? Get to stepping.
You know, last time we talked about some of the stuff that we watch, like cooking shows, and we talked about America's Test Kitchen. But you know what I've been obsessed with lately?
What?
Two YouTube channels. One is the Mi Rancho a Tu Cocina. Have you seen that lady?
No.
Oh my God. So this lady that is in her late 60s or early 70s, and she's somewhere in Michoacán, she started a month ago and she already has almost 2 million subscribers. It's fucking crazy. And I've been thinking about it because she cooks outside con leña. And of course, you know, she's like, it's all the authenticity that, like, she's living the fantasy, you know, right? That a lot of people want to think, yeah, when they think of Mexico. So she's super popular. Y cocina medio raro. La otra vez hizo mole and she added, I mean, are you ready? She added crackers. She added tortillas and she added bolillo. And then she just did like 2-3 ingredients, pero siempre termina, man. And it looks so good.
I've heard of all that stuff in mole before.
I mean, I've heard of that stuff separately, but like it just seemed like excessive at how she put it all together. But I can't wait to make that recipe. It looks so good.
Girl, I come from a family where my grandma puts animal crackers in chocolate, okay? Like there, and the hot chocolate is thick. Okay?
That sounds bomb. So there's,
it's so bomb.
There's that de Mi Rancho Tu Cocina, and I think she just got a una placa de YouTube. Like, she's like famous.
And oh, I saw her on Instagram.
She's that amazing. Was so nice. I've been following her channel, and there había drama, way. Like 3 weeks ago, again, people were complaining about her that she's making all this money, and she's like, "Yo no me ando con habladurías de los ranchos." It was so fucking awesome. But I guess the daughter posted up a video, like 20-minute videos, talking about how she's not making money. And
yeah,
it's fucking crazy because people like,
yeah, get ready. I know you're starting a YouTube channel. Get ready to be exploited, bro.
Ay, Dios mío. Sí, güey, porque I'm going to have 1 million people watching videos about fucking history. That's not going to happen. But I mean, I hope so. Hopefully. But there's another channel, Cocinando con María Tavares. This is a lady in San Diego. And she also, I think she lives in the backyard because they have like a big piece of property of La Casa de los Patrones. And she doesn't give a fuck. She shows you los patrones y les da de comer. And she has like a, they make like a estufa outside for her and she's cooking. Y tiene gallos y gallinas y la chingadas. Again, this whole authentic shit going on. But her food is fucking amazing. It's Cocinando con María Tavares. Like those two, I'm addicted to. Like I'm actually making salsas. I never venture into making salsas.
What's your favorite salsa?
Ay, la salsa de chile de árbol, man. I'm always afraid of, I don't like tomatillos a lot because if you get the wrong tomatillo, it fucks everything up. But María Tavares uses tons of tomatillos. And my favorite is that, like, it's a typical Latina, man. She starts at pozole. She's like, acabo de comprar 40 libras de puerco. Like, she makes this incredible amounts of, like, of food. But it's so, so good. So, again, Cocinando con María Tavares y De Mi Rancho a Tu Cocina, those are, like, I mean, I guess they're early recommendations, but I just can't stop watching them. It's so, so good.
Yeah, that's fun. I only watch drag queen stuff on YouTube usually. I need to venture out and watch more. I do watch mukbangs, though, because they're really... I love to watch people eat.
Yeah.
And so my new favorite... I mean, she's really famous, but her name is B Loves Life.
Mm-hmm.
If you have not seen B Loves Life, bitch, you are missing out. She loves to eat like seafood boils.
Yeah.
So she'll have like a whole, she'll have like a whole like glass bowl, like, you know, like a big salad mixing bowl.
Right.
But it'll be a whole like crab and corn, like giant lobster. And she eats the whole thing. She has these like giant acrylic nails. She's the best. I will watch her eat all day long. It's nice.
Yeah, sometimes I go into rabbit holes of just like, there's, ¿cómo se llaman? Mukbang? Those videos?
You're the one that watches anime, bitch. You don't know about Asian culture? Mukbang. That was very offensive.
Esa madre, wey.
I think the origins of mukbangs, or mukbangs, some people call them, mm-hmm. I think they originated in Korea. I'm not sure.
But there's cooking versions of that, and those put me to sleep. It's like relaxing. Sometimes it's like we watch one recipe before falling asleep.
Oh, that's nice.
It's very soothing. But anyway, enough with YouTube. I'm so excited about today's episode. I've been waiting for this episode.
Oh My gosh, what are we going to talk about today?
So the ABCs of Latinidad became a thing. Other people started doing the ABCs of different things in different podcasts. It was awesome. Shout out to Cabrones.
I mean, it was a thing. I got it from another podcast.
Right. Remember? But I mean, the whole thing with Latinidad, like, it was so awesome to see it in so many different places. So I've been thinking about the history of the Lotería because, I mean, I've been thinking about a lot of things that we're obsessed with, like conchas, and we talk about this shit all the time, and Frida, and this and that. And one of the things that we haven't mentioned in the podcast is our obsession with anything Lotería, right? And I was like, why don't we do an episode where we actually play Lotería, and we talk about the history of Lotería, and we go through the cards, and we talk about what this stuff reminds us. Like, instead of ABC, we go like El Gallito, La Escalera, and we talk about what we think of those cards or what they remind us of. So
yeah,
I bought two sets of Loterías, and I send you one. And this is the original company that has been doing this Lotería since the 19th century. So I'm really fucking excited.
Awesome. Well, before we start playing, let's take a little break, and we will be right back. Oh my gosh, Babalito, I can't believe Latinos Who Lunch is back. I never thought I'd see the day.
Right, and we are stronger than ever, and we are independent as always. And for that reason, we actually have to find new ways to support our podcast. So the first option that we come out with for those with commitment issues, it's to donate directly to our PayPal. It can be a donation of any size, and as many times as you like. And in return, we'll give you a shout out in an upcoming episode. Our PayPal link is on latinoswholunch.com donate page.
Also on the donate page is option number two. Y'all have heard of Patreon before, right? You can help on Patreon for only $3. You can join our shout out level and get a shout out for every month you subscribe.
But if you want to be more intimate with Latinos Who Lunch,
you
can be our comadre. You can get a shout out. And in addition,
our comadre's intimate?
A comadre, like, girl, el chisme es real. You can be our comadre, and you can get a shout out and an additional exclusive episode every month for a $10 donation.
But wait, there's more. Become a Latinos Who Lunch madrina.
Wow.
At $15 a month and get everything from our first two levels. And we'll also send you LWL stickers and give you early access to episodes. So again, go to latinoswholunch.com/donate to help out and keep this podcast going.
Sí se puede. Sí se puede. Wow, everybody. Thank you so much for all those listeners that came through. Shout outs to Hillary N., Anna H., Nancy M., Miguel C., Stephanie B., thank you so much for all your support. But that is not all. We also want to thank Yesenia S., shout out to you. Shout out also to Raciel C., Christina H., Lucia A., Ivan L., Angelica, Liz Z., Roberto R., also a big shout out to Dora P., DS, Rosaura, and Bobcat. Thank you so much for all your support. It is thanks to listeners to you that we are able to continue to do this work. We are extremely appreciative of everything that you're doing, and we're going to continue to put out this amazing content for you guys. So again, thank you. Thank you very much to everybody. And now, continuemos con el show.
And we're back.
Okay.
All right. Let's play Loteria.
Okay,
listen, I'm not competitive, but I'm going to win. Okay, here we go.
Okay, pero bueno, I'm going to give you the rules first.
There's no rules. What's the rules?
Espérate, güey. But before we play, I want to play a little recording that I got from a colleague of mine.
Okay.
So again, I've been thinking a lot about the Loteria and the whole idea behind the Loteria. It's that there's all these symbols, right? And mm-hmm. but these symbols date back to the fucking colonial period. So there is a scholar in UC Riverside. She's getting her PhD. She's a candidate. She wrote her thesis on La Loteria. So she was so kind. Cynthia Lewis Neri, she recorded a small introduction on the history of the Loteria.
Oh, cool.
So why don't we play that first? We talk a little bit about La Loteria, and then we'll get into it.
Awesome.
I grew up in the suburbs of Southern California in the 70s and 80s. My father was born in Guadalajara, but this was a time when a lot of Mexican-American parents chose not to teach their children Spanish. They hoped that having good English-speaking skills would help us to better assimilate into American culture. As kids, we played all the mainstream board games like Candyland and Chutes and Ladders, but every now and then, my parents would bring out a cheap old cardboard-printed Loteria set, and we thought it was so cool that we got to use beans as game markers. This was my only exposure to the Spanish language, and I quickly learned all the characters and the object names. I always thought there was something fascinating, sexy, and a little bit scary about some of the characters. La Sirena, La Muerte, and El Borracho especially. They seem to be the antithesis of the beautiful images on the cardboard saint cards that the nuns gave the good children as prizes at my Catholic school. I never dreamt that I would later study all of these images. In the late 1990s, when I began to study Mexican art as a graduate student, there was a lot of new scholarship on late 18th century casta paintings, which are oil paintings executed as a series or a chart with separate panels illustrating a specific casta grouping, a man, a woman, and their racially mixed offspring. I decided I wanted to write my MA thesis on that topic. These really racist images interested and disturbed me in the same way that the Loteria cards had, but I didn't immediately make that connection. One day I was in the Autry Museum in Los Angeles, and I thought I saw a casta painting chart from across the room. It, on a gridded wooden rectangular board, I saw the same people and the costumes and objects painted in the same style as I had seen on the casta paintings. And as I got closer, I saw that the chart even included racial terms used to designate the castas. So I was really surprised to read on the museum label that this wasn't a casta painting, but it was a painted Loteria board game. And I thought, this is crazy. It's like the characters had jumped right off the casta paintings and onto this game board. There has to be a connection between these two genres. Casta paintings were produced between 1711 and 1790. The earliest Mexican Loteria games were played in 1769. But the earliest Loteria images I found date from the 1820s and 1830s, exactly when the casta system was officially banned. So legally speaking, the casta system ended, but the cultural and racial stereotypes never disappeared. They were just reinterpreted and appropriated, migrating quite fluently into the realm of popular art. I divided the cards into three categories: people, objects, and nature. And I started to investigate possible visual and textual sources for each of the images. And this was a lot of fun, but so much work, because there was such a wide range of sources spanning centuries and many different histories of art, including European art, pre-Columbian, Spanish colonial, and modern. Just to give a few examples, La Sirena derives from images of the biblical Eve, but also from the sirens of ancient Greek mythology, and also from the trope of La Malinche. La Muerte and La Calavera draw from Christian iconography, but also from Aztec ideas about death, and also from the 19th century prints of José Guadalupe Posada. As I conducted my research, I realized that to fully understand these images, like La Bandera, El Negrito, and others, I needed to look beyond art historical sources. I also had to read 19th century poetry, popular novels. I had to look at prints and early photographs. I had to listen to the verses of corridos and ballads. I had to read period newspapers and advertisements from the period. This was all overwhelming, but really exciting. I realized that the popular, as in for the people, these popular Loteria images represented a more truthful or authentic Mexican history than the images we find in Mexican fine art. The title of my MA thesis was Loteria and la Alma Nacional. These images got me thinking a lot about nationhood and the construction of Mexican national identity, which in the 19th century, this formulation was a really complex, sometimes contradictory, and messy process. The history of racial mixing, the really confusing class structures, and the shifting politics resulted in a national art that drew from a wide range of sources and tended to blur the lines between the mythical, the stereotypical, the real, and the imagined. Just as Costa paintings were a means of inventing race, the Loteria images can be understood as part of a process of imagining identity, but in a playful, sometimes rascache way.
Very interesting.
It's so amazing. And another thing I find out about La Loteria is that it's actually, you have the whole thing that Cynthia talked about in relation to the Casta paintings. But did you know that many of the symbols of the Loteria are related to the Arma Christi, the weapons that they used to, in the Passion of Christ, when Christ was crucified? Por eso tienes, so the main symbol, for example, el gallo that was, it's the rooster that crowed after Peter's third denial of Jesus. So, and then you have la escalera, you have all of these symbols that were used in the Passion of Christ. So you have all these racist ass Casta symbols, you have the symbols of Arma Christi, and then all the symbols of Mexicanidad. It's super, super interesting. And what's also interesting is that we are, of course, we love it and we use it everywhere. If you go to Pilsen, for example, there are portals and they have different symbols of La Loteria. But what we don't talk about is that this was created by a French designer in the 19th century. And also, they are the Clemente Jacques people, which now they have. They tienen ketchup and all kinds of products. Mm-hmm. So it became a thing. They stayed, this French family stayed in Mexico, and they are still there. But it was designed based on those things. And then later, José Guadalupe Posada, who developed the figure of La Calavera y La Muerte, he made it more popular. And by the beginning of the 20th century, then you have the game as we know it today. So the version of the Loteria that we got, it's actually, it goes back to that. It's the same people that have been making this game for, like 100 years or more than 100 years for now, like almost a century and a half. So that's fucking interesting to keep that in mind.
That's amazing. Yeah, I knew it had a long history. And I knew it was racist, judging by, just the imagery on the Loteria cards. But let's play, and we can get into some of the symbols a little bit more in depth as we play.
Sounds good. Who wants to go?
Okay.
You want to go first?
You go first.
Okay.
Okay.
No, I am in.
Okay, excuse me. You said you were going to give me rules, and you gave me zero rules. You played a recording.
I was just thinking that.
Are we playing cover all?
Okay. So what are we going to do? So we both have the same game, right? So you're going to choose a different tabla than I am. I'm on tabla número cinco. What tabla are you in?
I'm number one, because that's who I am, baby. You're number one every time.
Perfect. So now you have to shuffle your deck so we know that we're getting different cards. And we might get the same one, so we can just skip it. And the idea is that every time I call one, and then if you have it, ponle tu frijolito o lo que le tengas tú que poner. And then...
We all know how to play bingo, but are we doing coverall?
Yes,
like we're covering it all.
Sí.
All right, let's do this.
Okay, pero espérate. Also, when we call one of the cards, let's talk about what this shit reminds us of.
No shit. That's the whole point of this. Why you over-explain everything, bitch. Let's do it.
Ándale, pues. Okay, I'm not going to do that anymore. El bandolón.
Okay. What do you have to say about el bandolón?
Absolutely nothing. Next.
That was my uncle's nickname for many years, though. All right. El Catrín.
This is part of those Casta series that you have class and race distinctions. So, like, again, I also don't have a lot to say about that.
So I always thought this character was like gay or like a fancy person,
right,
or both. And then some of the history that I've read about El Catrín, it kind of shifts depending on who printed it.
Right.
And I remember somebody telling me that the Catrín is also like the hipster.
Ah.
So what do you think about that?
I don't know. There's all these new versions of the Lotería that people are doing. I think there is a Mexican hipster version of the Lotería. So I can see those associations.
I mean, technically, this Lotería that we're playing is like the third most popular version, because there's been many before.
Right, right, right. And I think the one that made it into the popular imaginary was that the one of José María Guadalupe, which
yeah,
also was a homophobic, racist motherfucker. But that's a whole nother episode.
Okay, dale.
Me toca. El Borracho.
Oh my gosh.
Ay, ay, ay. So, ¿empiezas o empiezo?
Well, I'm just happy that it's a white borracho and not a brown one.
Right. I was
because this shows you that alcoholism has no boundaries.
Not only that, dude, like when all this idea, I mean, drinking has been around in the Americas for a long time, but what the fucking Spanish did is that they create all this trauma on indigenous people. They create all these diseases, all this social, like a lot of things happened because of the Spanish. And then in the late 18th century, they tried to blame indigenous people because eran muy flojos, o porque no se bañaban, o porque tomaban mucho, because they were drunk. So like all of the fucking problems that they brought into the Americas, they're the one those are the excuses they were using for either extermination or the continuation of different forms of colonization. So every time I see El Borracho related to anything Latino or anything indigenous, I always think of that. It's almost like, it's like the U.S. pharmaceutical fucking companies. They make up diseases and then they give you the medicine for it and another medicine for that medicine. It's a fucking endless cycle, man. It's so annoying.
It's true. And I think it also serves as a tool to kind of normalize alcoholism within Latinx families.
Right, right.
I mean, honestly, I remember when I first went to Mexico when I was like 7, and there was a cantina in the Orumbillar, you know, like next to the church.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I was shocked because the priest from the church was in there drinking with all the borrachos. And then I remember we had a Día de Campo and we went to go play this place in Durango called Las Canteras.
Uh-huh.
And we went to, which was, now that I think about it, super fucked up because it was like Native American dwellings that like we went and played in, you know, like that should probably be protected.
Right.
But I remember associating, like we played Lotería out there on the rocks and stuff with my grandma. And I'm like, oh yeah, El Borracho. I just saw that. And like, okay, so this is just like part of the culture. Cool.
That's so crazy. You know? And also,
I know.
And also because we normalize it. So, and we've talked about this before, that some people, like there's still a lot of stigma on therapy and mental health in the Latinx community. But one of the ways to deal with that shit for our people for a long, long time has been that. It's fucking been drinking. And we just deem them as borrachos and it's funny, it's no big deal. But the reality is that there's some deep mental issues that they just, you know, we're not dealing with, you know? Like, we all have those examples in our family. So it's nothing to joke about, gente.
Okay, next, El Valiente. El Valiente is holding a, like, some sort of, it looks like a machete or like some sort of agricultural tool. He has a sarape and he's like ready to fight. Like his hat is on the ground. He's ready to go.
This is the typical mental image that we get from like Mexican cinema and then later all those like fucking stars in telenovelas, like this sort of like super machista figure that became so famous with people like Pedro Infante and Jorge Negrete and all that shit. So when I see that, I think of those Hacienda movies and telenovelas, you know?
Yeah, that's what it, I mean, that's exactly what it looks like. Next.
Okay. El Camarón.
Okay, come through, ceviche. Been a very important part of the culture for many years.
All I can think about is, camarón pela, tú quieres camarón pela, te doy. Te toca, güey.
Tú me traes a puros... This is, I love that. I love that. So we haven't talked about this either. Every one of these has like an official rhyme. And I think every family kind of has their own little twist.
Right.
Depending on the card. But sometimes they'll say the rhyme before when we're calling the cards as like a clue, like when it gets closer to the end.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I remember playing this stuff in they call it Kermes, and it's kind of like a carnival. So like in where I used to live, in El Fraccionamiento, in the park, like all the families were organized at Kermes once a year, and there's always a table with Loteria, and also in school, and yeah, somebody will tell you the little rhyme, but this version of the Loteria comes with it. ¿Qué dice del
tú me traes a puros brincos como pájaro en la rama.
Ay,
okay. El pájaro. Damn, bitch. I already got three. I am in this to win this.
Not me, girl. I know. We'll see what happens.
El pájaro is like, it's a red bird with a yellow underbelly on a branch.
Right.
For those of you who have never seen these cards.
No association over here.
Dale.
El que nace pa' maceta no sale del corredor.
I don't know what the fuck that means. Mexicans love to do play on words. So la maceta?
Yes.
The pot.
Right. I don't know. I feel like there's a double innuendo there, pero I don't know. I'm too dumb. I don't know.
Usually maceta is like people make a reference to maceta as like your head, right?
Oh, that's right. That's right.
So read it again.
Dice... El que nace pa maceta no sale del corredor.
Oh, this has a lot of meaning now. Please, listeners, write into asklwlpod@gmail.com and explain that card to us. Okay, next, la sandía. You got it?
Yes,
I got it.
Oh, fuck. Yes, I got it. Hold on.
Oh, damn. I got a regular bingo, but we're playing coverall.
Es que siempre que veo sandías, I think of like las pinches pinturas de Frida Kahlo, man. Like, it's always this... This association with the tropical and the wild, and I don't know. It annoys me.
Well, and the way the watermelon is cut is very suggestive, it is. If you ask me.
A ver, ¿qué dice otra vez? La barriga que Juan tenía era empacho de sandía. Qué clever.
Oh, shit. Damn, you're Juan today. All right.
I am definitely Juan. So, next one. Is El Mundo. I cannot find the fucking thing.
Oh, El Mundo.
What is this?
Like,
go ahead.
He's like a guy on a thong holding the world up. He's like Atlas.
Can we talk about this thong? He's wearing a pink. He's wearing a pink thong. It looks like a fucking...
Yo, El Mundo can get it. And you know what? He's ready. Y'all have been... Let me tell you, El Mundo needs no poppers. Y'all have put a big ass hole in the ozone layer. She ready, okay? She is ready to get fucked, okay?
That is a pendejo.
Yo, all right, we have some water-based soluble. the glaciers are doing their work. And let me tell you, we got a good 20 years before this whole world ends, so we got to be nicer to El Mundo.
Ay, güey, ya se acabó, güey. Ya valió madre, güey.
Okay, number 22, La Bota.
La Bota. Wait. Oh, I don't... Oh, yes, bitch. Okay.
Okay.
If this is a Mexican loteria, why do we get a bota that looks like a military bota? That makes sense now.
I mean, because this is all about nationalism.
Right.
And
true.
Also, it's a continuation of colonization. So a lot of the symbols look European, even though they're Mexican.
That was one of the things that like that was like an aha moment when I heard Cynthia talk about it in her recording, that this system of oppressions have to go through different periods, right? So you have the independence, so things don't need to look like the way they look in the colonial period. So it's not the casta system, but you have to reinstitutionalize and revamp the whole thing. So it makes sense that this is based on a lot of those imperialistic, nationalistic, fucking racist things that were brought up by the Bourbons, which was the French family, and of course the French family that was in place in Mexico when the casta system was, the casta paintings and the casta system in a way was created in Mexico. So fucking interesting. Me toca. El venado no ve nada.
El venado. We always say that.
Yeah.
My family always says that. Yo, there are so many deer here. In Ashland, it's terrifying.
Not last night, but
a few nights ago, I stayed really late in the museum doing my installation. And so I think I was walking home at around like 2 in the morning or something. And there was a deer waiting at the crosswalk, and we crossed the street together.
What?
These deer, it's like Rich or Scary over here. These deer think they're people. Like, they're just, like, part of the community. There's city deer. So, like, every day when I walk home, I'm not scared to run into, like, people. Like, you know, like somebody mugging me. I'm scared that a deer will come out and attack me because I'm getting too close to their baby deer. Because they just hide in the shadows.
Scary.
And they're nice deer, but you never know. You know what? I've seen a lot of when animals attack. And these fucking deer are huge. Like, you don't realize how big a deer is until you're standing next to it crossing the street, you know, well, on a crosswalk.
The scariest thing is when you're driving. That shit can kill you, man.
Oh, no, I just run them right over. I don't give a fuck. No, I'm just kidding.
What is it with your residences and wildlife? Remember when you had that seagull family and it was like a whole fucking thing?
Oh, my God. In Colorado, when I and shout out to Breck Creates in Breckenridge, Colorado. There was these, okay, first of all, don't feed wild animals because my friend Michaela and Crystal were helping me and they started feeding these foxes. And then they left and the foxes would come to my door. Like they would be like, hello, like we're ready for our snack. And I'm like, bitch, I am feeding you. I'm not that kind of guy. So like, don't feed the animals, people. Because then they become dependent on us and we're about to exterminate ourselves. So please stop.
I like your deer knocking on the door.
No, and you know what? Foxes are cute and they're cuddly, but you know what? That's a game. They're trying to get you. And I did a lot of research while I was there because I'm like, they would literally follow me around the streets.
No way.
In Breckenridge. So I'm like, maybe these motherfuckers have rabies, but guess foxes aren't known for carrying rabies, but girl, if I see a raccoon, I'm going the other way because raccoons, no way. Those are little, I don't want to get, if you get bit by one of those, it's over. Anyway.
There's a park right here that was a quarry and then it became a dump site and then they made it into a park. It has tons of raccoons. It's so fucking scary, man. I see them all the time.
Mm-mm.
Anyway.
Mm-mm. Okay, next. El Pino.
Ah, la madre. No, I don't have that. Dice, fresco, oloroso, y en todo tiempo hermoso. Ah, it's la otra.
So, shout out to this artist here in Southern Oregon. Her name is Erika Ledesma, and she told me that her family actually came to this part of the country because the United States government hired them to be pineros. Do you know what that is? So, because, you know, whites are going to white. People are going to people. There's a lot of beautiful pine trees here. And so the lumber industry is huge here. And so was, I should say. And so they've like full like mountains have been stripped of trees. So in order to replenish them, they hire pineros to go back up to the mountains and replant all of the trees. So a lot of forest over the years have come back. Thanks to the work of all these pineros, and I've never heard of them before because, of course, anytime that immigrants are hired to do something as part of a government job, right. They don't want people to know because, you know, white people get mad when when there's brown people doing jobs here that are helping them. I don't know why.
Si.
So anyway.
Si no se quejan, ahí nos están usando, güey. It's the same fucking shit.
It's pretty amazing. It's just fascinating. They like wear these... They grow the little seedlings and then they have these special backpacks and they with like special pockets and they have like baby trees, little seedlings in each one of them and then they plant them in the forest. It's amazing.
That's amazing. Okay. Me toca. La arpa vieja de mi suegra ya no sirve para tocar. Ay, qué feo, güey.
Ding, 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 ding. And on that note, el músico.
El músico, espérate. Oh, yes.
Can you tell me why el músico looks like everybody has a tío that looks like el músico?
I think I'm becoming that tío, man.
Oh, dude. No.
I am. I need those pants. This músico's wearing a checkerboard pattern with pink, red, and blue. And blue checkerboard. So I need that. I need that fucking outfit.
And do you see the decoration in the background in there? Very French.
It's super, super French. Oh, fuck. That's the thing, man. Like, we're obsessed with this thing, and this is so, so, so French. Ay, no, qué horror. Okay.
Okay, dale.
La bandera.
Oh, la bandera. Yeah. Yes. Verde, blanco, y colorado.
All...
La bandera but... del soldado. Wow.
Wow. Talk about...
Why do Mexicans love to rhyme so much? I love that.
Talk about nationalism, man. And all of this shit was created in the 19th century. And here we are 200 years fucking eating that shit up. The original colors of La Bandera came from the Plan of Iguala after independence. They talk about the three guarantees of that we supposed, that the government supposed to respect in terms of the freedom of the people. So each color, and I don't remember them, but each color represent a different guarantee. And of course, the center of the flag is going to be ¿cómo se llama? La águila devouring a serpent on top of a cactus, which is supposedly what the Aztecs saw. They were supposed to see that symbol when they founded their city, Tenochtitlan, so today is Mexico City. So all of this stuff, French occupation, militarism, the flag, all those symbols of national identity in La Lotería, they're all Mexico City-centric. And it's so crazy because we do complain that we are, for example, we talk about in the podcast that we are so Mexico-centric, right? That we should be more inclusive to other parts of Latin America. But when we talk about this shit, it's even more specific to Mexico City because a lot of nuances of costumbres in Durango, for example, where you're from, or Chihuahua, where I'm from, that is not part of the national identity. It's only part of like regional identity, you know? It's so crazy.
Speaking of Durango, el que con la cola pica, el alacrán, also known as Babelito. Just kidding. You're a top now. Okay, so yeah, el alacrán, that's always my favorite because I'm from Durango.
What is it with alacranes and Durangos? Because I remember as a kid we had a cenicero and it had like a dead alacrán in there.
Their alacranes are everywhere in Durango. That's why.
¿Nunca te ha picado uno?
It's high desert. No, girl, they're part of me. Why would they attack me? Like, don't you step in Durango. They will fucking eat you alive, bitch.
In Las Vegas, they attack my nephew, Sebastian.
Oh, because he's not from Durango. He needs to get with it.
Those glow-in-the-dark fucking alacranes of Vegas are so fucking crazy.
I know. Vegas is insane. They have so many alacranes over there. Okay, dale.
Okay, el que sigue es el Apache.
Okay. Oh, wait.
Oh, I have a good story. It says, ay, Chihuahua, cuánto Apache con pantalón y guarache.
I feel like Lotería is playing more in the north than in the south of Mexico, right?
No, I...
Judging by these symbols.
I think what it is that this stereotype of... First of all, this Apache is super white, right? But this stereotype...
But it's the brown... Other than another one of the cards, it's the brownest character in the whole set. All of the other characters are white.
Super white. But what is interesting is that... When the Europeans arrived to the Americas, Christopher Columbus arrives to the Caribbean, and there was a mistranslation between a group of people called the Caribs. And somehow in the mistranslations and everything, the word cannibal came in, right? So there was this fantasies about these people naked, running around with not a city, not a civilization. So since 1493 that he goes back and later, a couple years later, his journey started being published, there's this idea that everybody in the Americas is like that. So all Native Americans started being related to that stereotype of the barbarian, naked with a couple of feathers. And the way that the Apache looks in this card is based on an indigenous group in Brazil. They call the Tupinamba. Later in the 18th century, the idea of the barbarian moved from Brazil to the Southwest. And all of a sudden, all native groups in the Southwest, the Comanche, the Apache, the Zuni, all the different pueblos in Mexico, they were all being shown in maps as Los Apaches.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea of the barbarian is El Apache. That's why it says Ay Chihuahua, because it's supposed to belong in the north. It's supposed to belong in North Mexico. To the point that it's part of our national imaginary. Gloria Trevi has a song called Amor Apache, because it's supposed to be violent love, amor violento. It's so fucking crazy. And we grew up with those ideas and we play with it. Ay, qué amor apache, cuánto amor, you know, like, qué violento. But it's just this relation between people in the north, like the Tarahumaras, los Yaquis, all of those different groups being all Apaches, all being barbarians, all being violentos. And they all are portrayed the same way, in like you see it in this card.
Un indio, what is it? Un indio quiere llorar.
Sus lagrimas casi rotas. Ay, güey.
Y ese indio soy yo. Tan, 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 tan. Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's so crazy.
Okay, here we go. Next card. Are you ready?
Yes.
Al pasar por el panteón, me encontré una calavera. La calavera.
Ay, güey. No, güey, yo voy mal en este juego. Ni una me sale, chingado.
Happy Dia de los Muertos, everyone. Go ahead, Ned.
That's right. La cobija de los pobres. El sol.
That's so fucked up.
So fucked up. Pero wait, this is also part of the Arma Christi, the sun and the moon, because there was an eclipse during the Passion of Christ.
Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, here we go. Let's see. I want to see the rhyme for this next one. This is probably my favorite card of all time.
Uh-huh.
Con los cantos de sirena, no te vayas a marear. Interesting. So I didn't know that rhyme. So it's basically tying La Sirena to like the old European stories of sirens.
Right.
Singing and deceiving men. Yeah, which is interesting because she said it's tied to Eve, who also betrayed man, right? So
right, and La Malinche.
Very interesting.
Yeah, and La Malinche, who supposedly betrayed Mexicans. And we should do, I'm hoping to get one of the curators from the Denver Art Museum, because they're preparing a bit retrospective on the history of La Malinche. And for those of you who don't know, La Malinche was the translator of Cortés. She was, I think she was from Campeche. I don't remember. I need to do my research because I'm writing an essay. But she became the translator between the Aztecs and Cortés. And supposedly she had the first child of Cortés, which is fucking a lie. Like, she's known to have the first mestizo kid, right? So she is known as a traitor. So to this day, people say Malinchista, like, you're a traitor. But this exhibition at the Denver Art Museum supposed to, and the Fowler at UCLA, supposed to revindicate this idea, because since she was sexually abused and she was kidnapped, and there's all these things that people don't talk about. But this idea of femininity and all the stereotypes are so present. That's why you see it right here with this card.
Yeah, and this version that we have is the latest from Don Clemente. Yo, I mean, La Sirena has never looked better. I mean, she's a fucking athlete. Look at those abs, bitch. And you know, this makes sense because if you think about it, a mermaid has to use her abs to swim.
Y para cantar,
so, yeah, so like all this Little Mermaid shit with this like no muscular body, like how are you gonna flap your fins if you don't move your abdomen? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I like how accurate this is. Even though her hair looks like a Vidal Sassoon Herbal Essence commercial, supposed to be wet hair. I cannot wait. I'm actually really interested to see what they do with the live action Little Mermaid, because like with the hair underwater, you know, especially because it's going to be played by a black actor. I wonder if they're going to have it in braids or it's going to be interesting.
It's going to be something. That. Yeah. That's funny.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Your turn.
Cotorro da calapata y empiezame a platicar. El cotorro.
What?
Ca.
Okay, here we go. Next card.
Espérate, déjame platicarte la historia de un cotorro. So we had...
Oh, girl,
bitch,
hurry
up. We had a perico in my mom's house. And my mom no tiene nada de gusto, nada de sentido for animals. So the pobre perico was just there. And my family from Mexico is like, this poor perico is depressed. We're going to take him with us. So they took it back to Juarez. And then we went back to Juarez like a month later. El perico se sabía el fucking Mexican national anthem.
Oh my god.
It was so crazy. Sabía canciones y todo. But anyway, te toca.
The next card is Mark Anthony. Just kidding. La muerte. La muerte. Uncanny. Wow.
So I was like, accurate. Está rico.
It looks just like Mark Anthony, but it's a skeleton holding. What is that? What is that hook blade thing called? I forgot.
I don't know.
But basically, whenever you see death portrayed in like in a cartoon, and it's like the hooded character with that big weapon. What is that called? Fuck, I don't know. Yeah, it's not an axe. It's like it's a different tool. It looks like a farmer's tool, like to like para cosechar trigo, you right. know. But this one, this card, it has a pink background and the skeleton, and it's just a skeleton. It's not wearing the Dementor outfit. So.
Right. It's. I mean, this the inclusion of La Calavera y La Muerte. It's part of José María Guadalupe, José María Guadalupe, Guadalupe Posada. But it doesn't have that all that la vestimenta del the typical calaveras mexicanas.
And also like the ties to Aztec imagery with La Calavera and La Muerte.
Do you know that in El Pan Muerto in the center, that's supposed to be una calavera? You know how it has little como bumps?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's related to El Zompantli, and the Zompantli was for the Aztecs was a rack of skulls. So every time when people were sacrificed, they will cleanse el cráneo, the ¿cómo se dice? The skull, and uh-huh. they will it will go through all these whole rituals, and they will put it in this rack. And it was the idea that the heavens are being fed, so it was a reminder of that, but also to show that you better be careful, bitch, because like the Aztecs are pretty brutal, and they can kill you in any time. So it had double meaning. But there's like a long history of La Muerte in pre-Columbian traditions and also in Mexican traditions.
Interesting.
Me toca. Para el sol y para el agua, el paraguas.
Wow, that one was innovative. Very good. I love an umbrella. What can I say?
Ella. Okay, te toca.
Hey. Okay, next. Made famous by the chain restaurant Taco Bell, La Chalupa.
Oh my God. See, this is what I'm saying, man. Look at this shit. This is a image from Xochimilco, and this image with La Chalupera con flores, even though it's typical, it was typical back in the day. This comes from Maria Candelaria, which is a movie from the 40s. I think this was the first movie to win the Cannes Film Festival. And it was Maria Candelaria was played by Dolores del Rio. There's a famous still from the movie that looks just like this fucking card. So I'm sure that's exactly where they borrow it from.
So the chalupa is in reference to the boat, not the person,
yeah,
right?
No, the,
it's like a boat.
Correct. Okay.
That's cool.
Yeah.
And do you remember in LM, did you have Chalupa Day in elementary school when you went to school?
No, because I was in Mexico in elementary school.
Oh, you really missed out. There in Las Vegas, they used to make chalupas, and it was like, imagine everything was served in a microwavable tray, like a rectangular like cardboard tray. Uh-huh. Like TV dinners. So it was like a special like hard shell that was in the shape of that rectangle, mm-hmm. and then they would just put cheese. And then they would just put ground beef, like crumbles on top of it and microwave it and then give us taco sauce. And you better believe that Chalupa Day. I had three favorite days. Chalupa Day was my A number one. Number two is French bread pizza day because uh-huh. I love me a French bread pizza. And then three chicken nuggets because... the chicken nuggets. But shout out to all my Las Vegas peeps that remember Chalupa Day. Now they're feeding the children actual food. How sad is that?
It is very sad.
When I taught middle school, I saw the lunch menu, and as a teacher, you can just go into the cafeteria and buy whatever, you know?
Yeah.
And it was chicken nugget day, and I was like, ooh, girl, I'm going to get... This is before I was an advocate for the vegan community. And I was like, oh shit, I'm gonna grub on some chicken nuggets with ranch. I'm so excited. And I went to the kitchen and I ordered chicken nuggets. I'm like, you better give me a double order, you know, because I ain't no middle schooler no more. And it was pieces of grilled chicken, like cut into the shape of chicken nuggets. And I'm like, excuse me, where is the processed meat? And they're like, oh, we don't do that anymore. We're actually feeding the children food. And I just threw the plate back. No, I'm just kidding.
Like, you mean there's no crash bones in this piece of meat?
I want to eat Gelatin. Okay, yeah. Okay.
Okay, me toca.
Is it my turn? No, sí. Your turn. Dale.
Uno, dos, y tres, el soldado pa'l cuartel.
It's very interesting. I think also I remember the first thing that I remember from going to Mexico is seeing all the federales with their big guns, like just walking around, you know.
When you don't...
Like the military presence when in the 90s was very strong.
It's still there, man. You don't... Yeah. If you're not used to it, it's fucking intimidating at first, but then you get used to it. And it's just... And the history, the relationship between peoples and the military, it's so complicated right now. In Juarez, like, there's been a long history of narcos in Juarez, but the people in Juarez are actually more afraid cuando los militares están ahí because these people get paid nothing and they're abusing their work and in return, that's exactly what they do to the community. They fucking terrorize them. And it's fucking scary, man.
Yeah, it sucks.
Te toca.
Okay. El sombrero de los reyes. What do you think it is?
La corona.
That's right.
Nice.
Corona.
Bien barroca. Right. Barroquísima.
Me encanta el barroquismo. Okay,
me toca. La luna.
Oh, I think, you know what? I think my second favorite is La Luna. I love that one.
¿Por qué tanto amor?
It's beautiful. I think it's so beautiful. And the fact that it has a face is so great. And I've seen a lot of you with tattoos of La Luna and El Sol together. I've seen the combination. It's those tropes of people that think they're being like avant-garde or like, oh, nobody ever got this before.
Right.
Like the Loteria tattoos, also like Las Dos Fridas tattoos, like the Frida as a Venado tattoo. Like everybody's like, nobody's got this. And like everybody has it.
Shout out to La Coma Luis.
But anyway, you better. Oh, shit. Not his. His is different.
It's so different. It's unique.
It starts as a geometric and then, you know, it's different. But you better believe, as soon as I start getting real tattoos, I'm gonna get a Luna tattoo. I think that would be sick.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. Nobody has ever done that before.
Yeah.
Okay. Las Jaras del Indio.
Okay, bitch.
Las Jaras del Indio Dan. Anyway. Donde pegan Dan. Las Jaras.
And that's just like two arrows,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, but this is also related to the spears that pierced Jesus Christ's side. Also, it's like los romanos cuando le picaron la panza, you know?
Hot. Okay, next, La Rosa. Oh, you know what? This one is also very beautiful.
Yes, it is. Oh my God.
It's basically just a rose, but it's this like beautiful magenta color.
I'm sucking at this game, man.
I know. Rosa, Rosita, Rosaura.
Ah.
Shout out to our listener, Rosaura. Oh my gosh, she's the best.
She is.
Okay.
El Pescado. I think we should just like call them till one of us wins.
Yeah, I thought that's what we
pues
were
sí,
doing.
Pues sí, pero apurarle.
Oh, now she's in a rush? Shut the fuck up. Just keep going. What the hell?
What did you say? El Pescado.
Oh, bitch, there's nothing better than a mojarra frita, right? Oh my God, that's what I want.
I don't think I've ever had mojarra frita.
You haven't lived.
That sounds good.
I mean, in theory, I'm talking about it in theory because, you know, I am a vegan. Okay, next. Here we go. Pórtate bien, cuatito. Si no, te lleva el coloradito. El diablito.
Oh, wow. That's not what I expected.
I know.
Ay.
My grandma, so we did this, we do these performances with my family at art museums called Family Fiestas. Uh-huh. And my grandma got really mad because we played Loteria and on the first one we ever did. And my friend Michaela shoots all the fiestas for me. Like she documents them. And she got the moment where my grandma was calling the cards and she held up El Diablito.
Oh, that's good.
And at the same time, and my grandma has always, her nails are natural, but they're always like painted red.
Right.
Or like a crazy color. And then it was sunny outside, so she had put her bufanda. She like put it above her, like on top of her head, her scarf.
Yes.
And so she looked like she was like some sort of like holy figure holding up. And she's like, "Ay, mijo!" And it came out in a magazine, and she was like, "Ay, mijo, ahí me tienes de bruja en esta revista." And she was like so
con la carta
angry.
Del diablo.
Yeah, anyway, El Diablito, I mean, classic devil, right? It's got a chicken leg, it's got a hoof,
bitch, this,
it's got a... Por-
this,
a ponytail. It's got the trident, the horns, the goatee,
right?
The ears. You know what? The devil can get it, actually.
This Diablito reminds me of Eugenio Derbez. There was a character that he did in the 90s. This is all I can think about. He will always go like... like that's what it reminds me of.
Oh, my God. How funny.
Okay, la campana y tú debajo. Ay, güey. La campana.
Ding dong. Right. Okay, next.
Speaking of nationalism.
La araña.
La araña. Oh, I got that one.
Spoopy.
Right. Okay. La palma.
I wonder why that one's in there. What do you think?
I have all these associations with La Palma, but I doubt this French guy was that smart.
I wonder if palmas, because I know that there's that the Mexican blue palm. I wonder if they're native to Mexico or not. Because from my understanding, palm trees are not native to the Americas.
I think they come from different parts of the Middle East, because I know, for example, in
Mesopotamia,
in California, they were brought there by the Franciscans because they wanted a Mediterranean weather, because when the Franciscans arrived to Mexico, they wanted to start the New Jerusalem. So that was the idea, that they were going to start from zero. So like just basically kill everybody and then start from zero. It was a perfect place for the New Jerusalem. And I was reading this book on Jamaica and how they brought palm trees to Jamaica. And now you think of Jamaica and that's what you think. But the palm trees were not even there. So when tourists go there, they expect to see that fucking landscape, even though they were brought there, I think, in the 18th or 19th century. It was pretty fucking late.
They're not native to here. I actually heard that in about 200 years, there will not be any more palm trees in LA because they're going to all go extinct, which is interesting.
I think they're going to stop watering them, right, too, because they don't produce any oxygen. They just look pretty. But also there's all these associations with the wilderness, with the wild. In fact, there's all these fucking treatises of the 18th century that says that in all those tropical places, people do not know how to think. They don't think right. So because it's too hot. So every time you see I'm not talking about one or two. These are scientific fucking treatises. Immanuel Kant, for example, wrote this whole thing about how about different peoples in different parts of the world. And according to the weather, that's their capacity to think. And the perfect weather, of course, is in fucking Europe, according to them. It's so fucking stupid.
Well, you know, when it's right, it's right. Also, that's why there's so many alacranes in Las Vegas, is because they come in the palm trees. They're not really native to the area.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Qué horror.
Now, you know, el que espera, desespera la pera.
Wow.
Do you have that one?
I don't. But that's my favorite fruit, for those of you who didn't know.
Is it really?
It's my favorite fruit. I fucking love pears.
Oh, I never knew that. I thought you only ate bologna and tortillas. Look at that. You're eating fiber too. Good for you.
That's my second favorite fruit, bologna. Ponle su gorrito al nene que no se vaya a resfriar. El gorrito. What is with this gorrito, man? It looks like...
Girl, that's what I was about to say. What? I have never seen a Mexican wear a gorrito like that. It looks like some Mae West shit.
Yeah, it looks like from a fucked up...
It's a bonnet.
Western...
Like an old Western bonnet kind
of
thing?
But like the way that it's drawn, it looks like tripas. Like it's so strange.
Oh, girl, we know what you're thinking about.
I am always thinking about that. The toca.
You're always thinking about tripas. And we ain't talking tacos. All right. Next.
The toca, the toca.
El nopal.
Hey, I got that one.
Do you? Oh, damn.
What?
Okay. And this looks like oh, my God, I never noticed. So it's a classic, like, beaver tail cactus. Like a big nopal, and it has a bunch of tunas on it, a lot of prickly pears on it, and they're ready to be picked. It actually, I never noticed how fruitful, like how like positive this image was, you know? And there's little flowers growing around it, little red flowers growing underneath
it. That plant gives everything. They give you pigments for your paintings, gives you fucking fruit. It's so good.
Al que todos van a ver cuando tienen que comer. Interesting. So, like, even the rhyme is, like, about how fruitful it is. Because like, you can eat the nopal, you can eat the fruit. You know, it's the plant that just keeps on giving.
And there's some, speaking of those YouTube channels, Maria Tavares was making some frijoles with not the actual fruit, but I think it was another kind, and you peel it and you get the center, and that is actually savory. It's not sweet. And she lo cortó en pedacitos y lo puso sus frijoles. So I forgot the name of that fruit, but it's used for all kinds of different purposes. Súbeme paso a pasito, no quieras pegar brinquitos. La escalera.
What? How is this tied to you tied the escalera to something?
Right, because that was
Catholic.
Yeah, something? Because that was used also in the Passion of Christ, in the deposition when they take Christ down from the cross. So it's part of the thing.
Oh, and the thing, they use the ladder. How interesting!
And the thing about it is that anything that actually had a drop of blood from Christ becomes precious, because it was like the preciosísima sangre de Cristo. So there was like a whole cult of the Arma Christi, the weapons of the Passion of Christ. And that included la escalera, the spears, the 9-inch nails. That's where the name of the band comes from the nails that they used to nail Jesus to the Christ.
I push my fingers into my eyes. It's the only thing. Oh, sorry. High school flashbacks.
Dale, dale, dale.
When I was very darks and I was trying to be straight, so I love 9-inch nails. It's like my favorite band, you guys. Okay. System of a Down.
Oh,
so
that's right.
Am
you
I
and
right?
My sister in System of the Down have a history.
Oh my God. It's like, you guys want to go to the Slipknot concert? Okay. Next, estúpida.
Mi pelo, idiota.
El caso cerrado. El caso.
I love that. Hay unas carnitas, güey, se me antojó. Me toca. La dama puliendo el paso por toda la calle real. Ay, la payasa. La dama.
Okay, working 9 to 5. She is a dama on the go, but she's also wearing a pencil skirt, so she can't walk that fast.
And she has a pink bonnet.
I love a pink
bonnet.
What?
¿Cómo se llama ese gorrito francés?
Oh my God! You really need to like. she has a Lisa. I can't. It's called a bonnet. You fucking dumbass.
Potato, potato, me vale.
No, it's not called a bonnet. Oh my God, I'm the dumbass. It's called a beret. You mix bonnet. You need Lisa bonnet. You mix bonnet with beret. That's funny. It's funny that I never noticed the beret, but now that you're mentioning the French connection here.
It's everywhere in this fucking thing.
She's wearing a clutch, because a lady always carries a purse at night. She can never be too sure. And then she's
white gloves.
Somebody just gave her white gloves, because you know she smokes a pack a day and she doesn't want to yellow her fingers. And then she's wearing... oh my God. Sorry, I just dropped all my chips on the ground. Fuck. Now I don't know what I got. Oh, man. She has kind of a little bow tie, like a little pussy bow, which is nice. And then she's got... That's what it's called. Don't laugh, you immature. And then she has... somebody just gave her some flowers, some red flowers. So somebody really loves her. Good for her.
Okay, me toca, güey.
El cantarito.
I don't have that one. I don't even know what that is.
El cantaro, like, it's on
como
the...
Para servir
isn't
agua.
That like... Like a jarro? Mm-hmm. Isn't that the symbol for jarritos?
Yes, I think so. Yes, yes.
Basically what?
Okay. There's something about a jarrito, le pones agua y te sabía tierrita, man. I love that shit. Anyway.
Oh, yeah. Do you ever, in Mexico, do you drink from the olla?
No, we drink from the faucet.
Wow. So in the village where my family's from, because I'm sorry, we're not rich and have running water like you.
Okay, authenticity telling me.
We do have running water, and shout out to Carreras Durango near Tepehuanes, if you guys know where that is. That's where my people are from. Where nope, I'm not gonna say that. Sorry. But it's like everybody kind of has a big cantaro with a lid on it. And you put the water in it, and the idea is that it works kind of like as a filtration system. So if you just scoop the water from the top, like the sediment settles to the bottom.
Damn.
And it tastes good. That water tastes so good.
It's motherfucking fresh.
It comes from the well right outside my bisabuela's house.
Wow.
Shout out to my abuelita Leonor.
What?
In heaven.
¿Me la das o me la quitas? El melón. Speaking of sexual
oh
imagery.
Oh my God. Speaking of my abuelita. Wow. Okay. Next, La Botella.
Oh, shit, that was my next.
Oh, my gosh. I had it in Melon, too, but I didn't say anything. La Botella, I never noticed. I always wondered why it was a ketchup bottle. And now I know because Don Clemente makes ketchup. Right. It makes so much sense.
They're known for their no se dice ketchup, se dice catsup.
Oh, my God. Here we go.
Al otro lado del río.
Where I'm from, we call it salsa dulce. So get into that.
Salsa
bitch.
De tomate.
No, we call it salsa dulce.
Really?
Yeah, think about it. Ketchup is just sugar. Sweet salsa.
Right, right.
It's just sugar.
Oh, wow. Al otro lado del río tengo mi banco de arena, donde se sienta mi chata, pico de garza morena. La garza. Ay, güey.
Oh. I feel like every family has a landscape with a garza in it.
Yeah, it's...
Right?
Yeah, I think so. I wondered if that comes from, like... this obsession with Mexicans and like Asian, like,
that's what I was gonna say.
Decorative stuff, yeah.
I was gonna say that. Oh my gosh, you're so right. Okay, here we go. Next one. El que a buen árbol se arrima. Buena sombra te cobija o le cobija. Oh, that's nice. El árbol, the tree.
El
classic tree, deciduous, beautiful.
Right, nothing Mexican about it.
There's trees in Mexico.
Right. La mano de un criminal. Okay, very creative. La mano.
Wow, a white criminal, you don't say.
Right.
Okay, next on the Lotería deck, we have, can you tell I'm stalling to look for the rhyme?
Yes, I am.
No me extrañes, corazón, que regreso. En el camino. Oh, nope. En el camión. Oh, yeah. Famous Lola La Trailera quote. Thank you very much. Okay, next.
Creciendo se fue hasta el cielo y como no fue bolón, tuvo que ser violonchelo. El violonchelo.
Oh, what is that?
It's just a violin.
I think, isn't it a cello? Because it isn't a violin, a violin.
I don't fucking know the difference, so I wouldn't know.
Wow, you uncultured swine. Next, La Estrella.
Oh my God. Wait, have we called el tambor?
No, bitch, pay attention.
Okay, now we have El Negrito.
Oh, yes, let's talk about the Negrito.
Pues sí, wait, this is also from the Casta paintings. And I've noticed that, and this is the rhyme, El que se comió el azúcar. They played it, yep.
Say it again.
I said they played it safe this time, because I've seen some, like, older...
I wonder what the original rhyme was. I don't think that's
not
what
only
it was.
The rhyme, but also the way that it looks. Like, it used to be somebody in blackface, you know? Like, and blackface had also a history in Mexico, because, like, there was a cartoon character in the 60s that was blackface, and it was everywhere. And even in the 90s, there was a character in a sitcom called Tomás. And it was a normal thing. And I think there's still parts of Latin America where they're just like in TV fucking every day. It's like the fucking people don't learn, you know?
He kind of, I mean, they give him kind of like a classy, dapper.
Like 1940s.
Yeah, he's wearing like pachuco pants and what do you call those? Saddle shoes? What are they called?
I don't know.
And then, but he's wearing like a little like barbershop hat. I don't know what those hats are called. And he's got a cane. So he also... kind of is like a clown, like, because his tie is spotted, he's got a flower in his above his pocket, so he kind of looks like it's like a minstrel actor show, you know, like,
right?
So, and like, it's got very like also like sales, like car sales, like skeezy scar salesman, car salesman vibes. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah. And to tie it back to Cynthia and the Casta system, you know that if you had at least one fucking drop of black blood, you could never become Spanish again in the Casta system. And people, Afro descendants in the Americas, they were not considered citizens of the Americas. They were considered citizens of Spain. So they were not even citizens in this fucking continent. They were ruled directly by the crown in Spain. So fucked up.
Oh my God. Mm-hmm. Okay. Next, here we go. El que le cantó a San Pedro no le volverá a cantar. What does that mean?
It's the whole...
El gallo, the rooster.
It's the whole thing with the rooster singing, you know, and the Passion of Christ, what we talked about. It's the same
Who is San Pedro?
Saint Peter? I mean...
Girl, excuse me, aren't you a historian?
It's the rooster. That crowed after Peter's third denial of Jesus.
Oh, is Peter the one with the laid hair? He's got, like, beautiful hair.
I'm sure that's...
Which one's the one with the beautiful hair?
I mean, I guess. Let's go
is
with
Is Peter
that.
The gay one?
No, that's San Sebastian. But that's another thing.
Sebastian. Yes. Shout out to you, Bastian. Okay.
No me extrañes, corazón, que regreso en el camión. El corazón. Oh, I have that one. Oh, fuck. I need one more. Okay.
I said that one like 20 minutes ago.
You did?
Good job. Yes, dumbass. Okay, next. El barril.
I said that in the beginning.
Wah, 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 wah.
Okay.
No te rugues, cuero viejo. Que te quiero, patambor.
Yeah.
What the fuck does that mean?
Yeah. I think it's in relation to how they make the tambores with the fucking skin.
Also, lotería.
Ah, man, I won. Was one away.
I won.
Oh, wow.
Okay, let's see what we have left. Go through them. Do you have any left?
I just have La Estrella.
I already called that one.
Oh, shit, I won? And I didn't even
know.
No,
you didn't. You got to put attention.
Put attention, bitch. Oh, my God. Okay. It's so crazy. I was talking about it in class yesterday, and my...
Hold on. The only one left is La Rana.
Oh, man. Yeah, I don't have that one, so you won.
It looks like somebody copied La Rana to do that Pepe the Frog meme.
It's a weird-ass rana, you're right. It looks like a sapo. It doesn't look like a rana.
What is the difference?
Gender?
No, it ain't.
Yeah. This is fun.
Yeah, Loteria. It's a really fun game. We've been playing it for centuries.
Oh, my God. So crazy. But it is so interesting because we fucking always divorce this oppressive-ass history from all this stuff, and it's so embedded in all this shit, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway.
Wow, that was great. Well, what do I win, Babelito?
You win the opportunity to tell us a recommendation.
Oh, my God. I don't get a real prize?
No, sorry.
Wow. Okay. Cool. What was the point of this then?
Right.
Oh, cool. Well, that was fun. Yeah. And if you don't know what La Loteria is, you can get it at your local supermarket probably nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can just Google it if you don't know what the images look like, because I know not every Latino plays Loteria. And it's interesting. I mean, when I first learned about Loteria, my mom's side of the family, my Guatemalan side of the family, they even play Loteria, only when my grandma's not around, because we're not allowed to play cards around her because she relates any card game to tarot.
Oh, so, son juegos de azar. I get it.
Yeah. So I heard that some people can do tarot card readings with Loteria and with playing cards because it's the same amount of cards and the symbols, you know, some of them are kind of similar. So there's also ties to that.
Oh, fuck. That's right.
We're playing the devil's game. El Diablo is in it. They ain't even hiding it in this game, okay?
That's so crazy, man. And... Pinches mm-hmm. Europanos, like, they just ruin everything, man.
I know. Shout out to Rosalia. Okay.
Rosalia, La Loteria.
La Loteria. What? Oh, shit. I was going to do a whole thing, but all right, here we go. You will have any recommendations, Beth?
Yes, I do. So I started talking about all the music that came out while we were on a hiatus. But one of the albums that really caught my attention was an album called Pretemporada by Milton James. And Milton James was one of the singers of Denver. If you don't know Denver, it's one of the seminal Chilean pop groups that really put Chilean pop on the map. And this was more than 10 years ago. this Latinx music that has been coming around all over Latin America, really, it was Chile that put a lot of this music on the map. And Milton James, they just broke up. Denver just broke up. And he came out with a single. It's called Pop Barroco. And it had amazing, had two amazing songs. But the whole entire album just came out a month ago. If you are not familiar with it, you can find it everywhere. The album is called Pretemporada. And by now, this album almost feels like nostalgia, because a lot of the very Baroque arrangements really remind you of some of those beloved Denver songs that I personally adore, and I miss that band already. But you get your Denver fix through this album. Again, the album is called Pretemporada, and the artist is Milton James. Listen to it.
Awesome, thank you. I'm gonna recommend a couple podcasts. Been listening to a few more art podcasts nowadays. You know, I have the Art People podcast, right? And it's hard for me to listen to art podcasts, I'm going to be honest, because a lot of them are a little bit boring. And, you know, it's hard to do a podcast about visual art a lot of times, because it gets into theory and that can be a little thick. But there's a lot of really good ones have come out recently. I think I've mentioned it before, but my friend Ziwan Chung has the podcast Seeing Color. Mm-hmm. And he actually interviews all people of color from around the world, because he travels all over. I think he's actually teaching in China right now. And so you can listen to that podcast. And also, this new podcast that I started listening to, hosted by a Latino, it's called Studio Confessions, and it's based out of New York. It's brand new. So I'm going to recommend that one for y'all.
Nice. Actually, and I just thought about, because you were talking about art podcasts, there's a podcast called the Modern Art Notes Podcast, and they have the episode 322. It's all about 18th mm-hmm. century painting, and they interview one of the curators from LACMA, which was one of the first curators to put Casta paintings on the map. So again, the name of the podcast is the Modern Art Notes Podcast, episode 322. It's called Painting in Mexico, 1700 to 1790. It's pretty fucking interesting. So if you are interested on all the amazing notes that Cynthia gave us, then you can go back and listen a little bit more about those ideas. So, yep.
Okay. Do you have anything else to say?
That's it, man. That's it. I am going to go back. I'm going to go outside for a little bit, because I want to engage with this fucking winter wonderland, because I know it's going to get old very soon.
Oh my gosh. And if you are in the Southern Oregon area, I'm doing an installation that we are inviting to the community to help with and collaborate with. So every Tuesday at the Schneider Museum of Art on the campus of Southern Oregon University, from 4 to 8 p.m., we have food, we have music, and we have fun. So come by, RSVP, Schneider Museum of Art, Google it. Because we order food, so we want to make sure we have enough food to feed everybody that comes. I'm only taking a break for Thanksgiving week, but through December 7th, I believe, I am there every Tuesday from 4 to 8.
Sweet.
Come by.
Sweet.
Say hello. Sweet. Thank you to everybody that's showed up and brings me. People are so sweet. Last week, this person brought me. One of the volunteers brought me homemade cupcakes. God bless you. And also, this woman brought me this old book from the 1930s of costumes made out of tissue paper. And so they look like really beautiful, elegant, like, you know, Erte. Do you know the artist Erte?
Uh-huh. Oh, yes.
They look like Erte designs, but all out of crepe paper and papel china. And so excited. I actually have scheduled in a month-long break to be in Las Vegas. Not a break from working, but a break from moving around the country. So February, I will be in Las Vegas the whole month, and I think I'm going to try to recreate all of those dresses.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
I want to learn how to make clothes, so this is the perfect way to do it with my medium, you know. So,
and Erte is that
it's gonna be
that
fun.
Art Nouveau, super geometric, cool, like 1920s.
Yes,
I like that. That's gonna be cool. Oh, that's nice.
I can't wait. Maybe my drag persona will make her debut next year with all these paper dresses.
La otra.
Mm-hmm. tuned. Stay tuned. All right. And as always, you can visit us at latinoswholunch.com. You can also email us at asklwlpod@gmail.com. And we might read your letter on a future episode. If you have a moment, please rate and review us wherever you listen to podcasts, specifically Apple Podcasts, if you will. That would be amazing. That really helps us out. If you want to help the podcast monetarily, as we mentioned before, you can make a one-time donation via PayPal. Link is at latinoswholunch.com/donate. If you want to support us on Patreon, guess what, Mimi? You can do that now. You can go and support us at the shout-out level for $3 a month. You can be our comadre for $10 a month or our madrina for $15, and you'll get special access to special episodes and many things. Go on our Patreon, read all about it, become part of our awesome LWL community. Shout out to the people that have already donated. And so if you can't donate, again, please leave us a review. That really means a lot to us, and rate us 5 stars.
5 stars only.
Because the more reviews we have, the more visible we are. And
visibility leads to representation, and representation matters.
Today's episode was produced by Justin Favela, Emmanuel Ortega, and Maite Sosa. The music you are listening to is from the band Brownout. I'm Fabi Fav.
And I'm Babelito.
Bye.
Ciao.